Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode number 900. Yes, I normally introduce the show after I do the intro, but this is episode 900. I want to thank anyone who's anyone, anywhere, who's ever listened to the show. It's been pretty awesome. I've got to speak to some incredible people. I've got to ask questions that, to be quite honest, a lot of the time, I probably wouldn't even have the balls to ask them if I didn't have these mics in front of my face and their face. It's really quite weird. Once you put a mic in front of someone's face, the whole game changes. Thank you so much if you've ever listened to, shared the show, taken something from one of my guests, or maybe even from something that I've said, and it's helped you a little bit. It's been an awesome ride. And today I'm able to sit down with someone who's been not a part of the show, but a part of the brand from the start. I met this guy 2004 at the side of a rugby field. There's a whole long story, but the short story is the next morning at 6 a.m., I was at his house and I started helping him. I started coaching him. Did we have a formal coaching relationship at that point? No, not really. I knew I wanted to help him. He knew he wanted to get better. The story's had loads of ups. It's had quite a few tough conversations. It's had downs. It's not gone always the way that probably both of us wanted it to go, but that's kind of how life is. However, if on that rugby field on that day, he didn't actually say, yes, that's okay, and if he didn't show up the next morning, things may have been a lot different. So it's an absolute honor that he is my 900th guest, or your 900th guest on the Inner Fight podcast. We talk about all sorts of different things, from being a financial advisor, depression, the way that he orders his clothes, that's later on in the show. And it's really quite interesting, but maybe super weird for many people. But the underlying thing, and it just works super well, and it's probably why he's enabled us as a brand and me as an individual to do what we've done, is because his value of honesty lines up so well with our brand value, honesty. And we talk about that a lot. And he puts it in ways, we spoke after the show, he puts it in ways that are just absolutely brilliant. I'm very grateful to all of you listeners, and I'm very, very grateful to today's guest. This is episode number 900 of the Inner Fight podcast. Honesty with Jonathan Brooks. No matter where you are in the world, thanks a lot for listening. Let's jump into the 900th show. Here we are, show number 900. Who better to get on? Member number one, Brooksy. Thank you.
Pleasure, mate. Good morning.
I guess this podcast is probably long overdue, but maybe it's my misconception. You don't really like talking, despite you love talking, but in front of cameras, social media and all of that stuff is not what I would say is your favorite. Is that right?
Mate, it's actually a funny story there. True to an extent. So I am probably the least inactive person you know on social media. I don't have a Facebook account. I don't have a Twitter X account. So I know something. Don't have an X account. Have an Instagram account that I haven't looked at or posted for years. But for work, I do Facebook videos, Instagram videos, webinars, and viewed in the millions all across the world, literally. So apparently I get messages from, you know, Tempo in Australia. Oh, mate, I saw your video on Facebook. I saw your thing. So for someone who is a technophobe, I do pretty well. I do all right.
Do you enjoy doing those for work?
I do, actually, yeah. It's quite good fun because it's stuff I know. It's easy to talk about things I know, and I feel quite comfortable. It's quite easy.
Is there two personas? Is there a work persona, and then there's definitely an Inner Fight persona?
I think the Inner Fight persona is probably the closest you'll get to me. And I think that I bring elements of that over into my work persona. And I think my work persona, I probably just polish up a little bit, I would say.
Not quite as sweaty and sloppy.
Not quite as sweaty and as sloppy and probably mind my P's and Q's a little better.
Why do you think we do that, mate? Let's go down that route. And what's your thoughts? Because I know you don't, as you say, you don't consume a lot of social media, but I know that you're not unaware of a lot of social media influencers, stars. Give us your rundown.
Matt, I think it's an illness. I'm very clear on my thoughts on social media. I really do. I got in the lift this morning, 6 people in the lift, including myself, 5 of them on their phones, nobody looking at each other. They're all looking at stories on Instagram, flicking up, flicking across, flicking up, flicking down, not even so much as a good morning. More interested in people they don't know than people that are right there in front of them. And I think there is an issue with different personas. I try to be as genuine as possible in everything I do. So if you know me as a friend, if you know me in the gym, if you know me from work, you'll certainly see a lot of common themes coming all the way through. There shouldn't be any surprises anywhere. I guess you just see different sides of that same filter. So if it's work, you may be much more on the left-hand side. If it's gym, the right-hand side, and family, maybe somewhere in the middle. But I do think it's a problem, and I do worry for the generations coming up, this FOMO, people comparing themselves to unrealistic attainments and people putting things out there that I know for a fact are not true reflections of themselves.
Yeah, why do you think people do that?
They like to feel better about themselves, I suppose. They want to be wanted. It's natural for everybody to be liked, right? Mm. People want to feel liked. You want to feel part of something, and that's an easy, cheap way to do it. You know, the body's conditioned, the human is conditioned to be frightened of red things throughout nature. Most red things are warning signs. So you get a red notification come up, you want to look at it. It's the same way that we are conditioned to feel good when we get endorphins. That's why we exercise, why we work out. You can get quick, cheap endorphins on social media as well. And that's that sort of self-justification, self-gratification, perhaps where there's nothing else happening behind it.
I was listening to something this week about what you said about the red, which I'm sure a lot of people know. And maybe I was reminded, or maybe I don't know. But when we first started having notifications on phones, when the engineers first put it together, they were actually blue. Okay. But it didn't create any kind of response in the user.
No urgency, right?
No urgency. That's why they're all red. And then I kind of, because I'm a little bit curious and I don't like the red as much as you don't like the red, and that's why I have them all turned off, I was like, surely someone might actually message and let us know if you can do this. I need to dig deeper into it. But what if we could turn the red notifications into, or what if we, I think you can make your phone black and white.
Yeah, mate, a pal of mine showed me how to do it. 2 buttons to make his whole screen black and white.
Really?
Everything's black and white. That'd be just go one step further, turn the notifications off, have a look at these things when you want to.
Yeah.
So allocate time for your emails, for your WhatsApp, for
But it's
for
still whatever. Built in, isn't it? Even like, I don't have any notifications on my phone. So I go to WhatsApp on my time, but there's all these red and it puts you in a heightened state, black and white.
Yeah.
The other thing that's quite funny, what you said is, you said you got in a lift with 5 other people. No one said good morning. They're interacting with people they don't know, don't care about, and probably will never meet. Whereas if there was an emergency in that building, or if there was a fire in that building, who would they need? The 6 people in that lift.
Exactly right. Exactly right. So they say, you know, too many people are chatting, not enough people talking. But here's the flip side to that. One of the reasons I gave up and I stopped Instagram is because I have to finish, right? So I'm also the world's worst or the best obsessive. So once I start, I've got to check the feed and make sure I've looked at absolutely everything and read everything. And the time I stopped Instagram was, this was some years ago, but you'll probably remember, they used to put everything in chronological order.
Yes.
So you could clearly go back to the last post you saw and then check all the others. Then they messed that. Once they messed that, they messed with my mind. And it was done. I broke my phone. I was without Instagram for a week because I couldn't remember my password until I got my phone fixed. And I went back on it, and it was the same people giving each other high fives, the same food that I was watching people eat, the same everything. And I was like, it's like watching EastEnders. You know, I haven't seen EastEnders for 20 years. I've put it on now, and it's exactly it's the same as it was 20 years ago, right? Yeah.
You broke your phone out of anger?
No, no, I just dropped it. Oh, okay. Just dropped it. It's common for me.
So angry about Instagram.
No, I was away. I dropped my phone. I always carry a spare because I dropped my phone. So just a quick swap of the SIM cards.
Yeah.
But of course, the new phone asked for their passwords, and I had no idea. Who remembers their passwords? So,
flipping back to what we were saying, mate, and personas and people, do you have a conscious set of values that you live your life by no matter what environment you're in?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's really important. And I think, you know, what I aim for and what everyone should aim for, if to have real harmony in your life, your actions should match your speech and your thought. So if your thoughts are matching your speech and your actions, you're in pretty good shape. So you can follow that through in everything you do in the gym. You can follow that through in everything you do with your family, as well as everything you do at work.
How do you do that, though? How do you make sure you create that harmony?
You've got to work on it, mate. You've got to work on it. And you've just got to be conscious and aware. And most things start with a thought, and you've got to assess that thought. Is this a useful, helpful thought? Is this in line with what I'm doing? And if not, do I need to change what I'm doing, or do I need to change what I'm thinking?
So what are some of your values?
Well, I mean, I did a video, as you know, in a talks a long time ago, and one of the things I said there, and I'll say it again now, is, you know, what you do in the gym is a reflection of what you do outside of the gym. So you'll never, I won't say rarely, but you'll never see me cheating on reps, cheating on distance, or cheating on anything. I'd rather come last in a class and get my meters done than hide from the fact that we're done. And I think that's important because that really helps go through in everything you do in life as well. Sounds a bit cliche, but, you know, at work, good enough, you know, is never good enough. If that makes sense. That'll do, will never do, I think. But you also have to remember that sometimes perfection, the pursuit of perfection, is the enemy of progress. Right. So, and one of my other failings is I can get caught up trying to spend too long to make an email perfect, whereas you might have got four or five emails out in the same time if you'd have just said, okay, have a think about that and let it go.
Honesty is an interesting one. I mean, that's what it boils down to, isn't it? And that's right. Probably why we have been friends for so long and why you're still coming to this building. It's one of our brand values. Why do you think people struggle with it so much?
That's a really good question. And I think people struggle because they worry about other people's perception of them. And I think really they've got to understand their own personal perception of themselves before they worry about what other people think. A lot of it feeds into what we said about social media. We used to say keeping up with the Joneses. A lot of people won't know what that means, but, you know, that's the old fashioned FOMO, I suppose, you know, but
four acronyms were cool.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, that's right. So and that's why. So if they can't be honest with yourself, you can't be honest with other people. So that's the first start, I think. So, and I can tell you the worst thing about lying or not being honest is not that other people don't trust you, but you can't trust other people. And that's the saddest part to be in life. So if you're not trustworthy yourself, you can't trust other people. And that's a real tough place to be.
I actually never linked the two directly, but immediately you say that,
Makes sense.
It makes absolute sense. So if you're... I always quite like speaking about cheating on reps, which is probably not a surprise. But yeah, I guess I've heard that a lot. And I have called people out. You say, hey, you didn't do your reps properly. And the normal reaction is exactly what you've just said. Well, no one's doing them properly. Yeah. It's like, well, actually, there are quite a few people that are doing. Yeah, that's a...
But it's basic maths, right? How can you know if you're getting better in the gym or in anything if you're not constant? So if you don't hit your 90 degrees in your air squat, for argument's sake, and you do 100 in a minute, and then next time you hit 90 degrees and you only do 80, you know, is that progress or not? There's just no way of knowing. So one of the beauty things about what we do here is consistency. If you've got consistency, you can measure progress. So you might say that's progress, but it's difficult to measure that progress. You might get people that can't make 90 degrees, okay? I get that. But if you can, you should. You see it in war balls as much as anything.
Your favourite.
Yeah.
So where does that value originate from? Were you born with it? Did you learn it? Was it imprinted, beaten? Where did it come from, mate? Have you ever thought about that?
I think... as much as anything from my family, from my mum and dad, I guess, growing up, and the grandparents and everybody around you. So I'm lucky enough to be born into an environment where that's the expected norm, to be honest with each other. And then to have it reminded on a regular basis that that's one of the most important values to have, I think.
Your dad strikes me as he's a super nice guy. But I can imagine in your childhood, it was brutal.
Yeah, we'd been told off, of course. You don't want to get told off too many times, right?
Yeah.
You know, one of the things in our house you get told off the most for, funny enough, back in the day was, you know, don't ask mum for something if dad's already said no, right? And vice versa. And don't ask dad for something if mum's already said no. That's the biggest way to get a hiding. The fastest way to get a quick hiding is, mum, can I have this? No. All right, I'm going to go and ask my dad. Or vice versa. But I mean, we had fun growing up. I can't remember a time where I was ever frightened of anything because we just did pretty much what we were told, I suppose.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I guess it transfers over to your son, James, who we've also had the pleasure of having in the building a number of times, who's now not a young son anymore. He's a young man. And that value, like, that's probably one of the biggest values that I can see in him as well.
I really hope so.
Yeah.
Out of anything else, I really hope so. I think that's all you can really hope for.
Was that a conscious thing, mate? Like, as a parent, were you... uber conscious of what you are laying down?
Absolutely, because you see it, and I was lucky enough to understand before it was too late, but you see your children as they're growing up become mirrors of yourself, and they mimic you, they do what you do, you know, monkey see, monkey do. Sorry, yeah. James, no offense, but that's so, of course, if they see you doing the right thing, they'll do the right thing. You know, one of the reasons, not only for my own benefit and because I enjoy it, but one of the reasons I've tried to keep coming back and keep training is so James grows up in an environment where fitness and health is important to him. So of course he's training and he's working out hard now. He won't cheat his reps either. He might get grumpy about them, but he won't cheat them.
I think I ask this from quite a selfish standpoint because, as you know, I'm not a father. I don't have any plans on being. Is there a point where the motivation is actually purely for the family? So it swings. I think when we're younger, we're only caring about ourselves. And if we're honest, if we use this example, if we're honest for ourselves, the honesty is all about bettering ourselves. So it's 100% me.
Yeah.
But as James came into the world when I first met him, he was in a high chair. So that wasn't super important because he doesn't realize it, but it's 10% James and 90% Brooksy.
Yeah.
But then it must... it must morph into almost the other way around.
Yeah, 100%. Absolutely right. It really does. And that becomes then, for me certainly, and for Linda as well, our biggest motivation is to try and be that role model where possible, and to provide the environment where he can go on to thrive and be his own role model.
But then he comes to a point where now he's 20.
Yeah, in a couple of weeks.
Does it, yeah, in a few weeks, does it start to rotate back? Yeah,
of course now, because he's now my motivator. He's one of my role models and keeps me honest, because he's going to the gym and keeping strong, and we were in the UK last week together for the last 2 weeks. He get up and does his thing and works out every day. He's swimming in the sea.
In Bournemouth,
in the winter.
For the listeners, yeah. Not here in Dubai. Yeah,
no, that's right, just to be clear.
Sorry to jump in.
He does
in
that late. All year round, whenever he gets the opportunity, and that's very motivating for me. So it keeps me motivated.
Your work is, I'm going to stick with honesty, mate, is inherently, from the outside, a dishonest business, which is quite insulting. But if you say finance, financial advisory, financial services,
yeah.
Everyone, which is not, and this is the problem, because it's the same with personal training.
Yeah.
If you say to someone, everyone's been fucked over by a personal trainer, where they haven't always. Everyone's had a tough time with a financial advisor. They've received bad advice. Actually, the advice was quite good, but then it was the global financial crisis. Then it was the
COVID. They'd have had bad advice. And a lot of people would have had bad advice.
So my point...
So I'd just like to pick up on one or two points. My work isn't fraught with dishonesty, but sadly the industry that I work
the
in
industry,
is.
Yeah.
But that's my biggest commodity. You know, I always say to my anyone that works with me and anyone that works around me and for me, that the most valuable thing that we have is a client's trust. And I'm very fortunate to have a number of clients I've worked with for many years all around the world, and trust is the most important thing that you have. And without trying to sound crude, you know, it's a bit like virginity. Once it's lost, it's gone forever. It's gone forever. And that's the most valuable thing. And they put their trust of their livelihoods, their lives, into our hands. And you better look after that. You better treat that with importance.
But that's also that mindset. You've summed it up really well, mate. And you've probably lost me about 15 minutes of arguing back and forward. No, but that's why you're insanely successful in what you do. Because you've almost taken an industry that, like personal training, could have a bad rap, and because of the way that you've approached it, you've changed the game.
Right, you're absolutely right. So it's a two-sided coin, right? Same as you. People turn up, what do you do? Oh, I'm a personal trainer. What do you do? A financial advisor. And if you meet someone for the first time in a bar, at a barbecue, at a house, they cringe, or who do you work for? And there's a list of names that they'll be like pulling their face, and then really explain what you do and how you do it and why they're different. Quite often it's, oh, that's exactly what we've been looking for. It's exactly what we need. And, you know, everyone else is failing is our biggest advert, really. Same in your game. There's a reason why people keep coming back here, because they trust you, because you look after it. And I know you feel the same way about a client's trust, really.
How did you get into financial services then?
By complete accident. Literally by complete accident. I was living in Hounslow at the time in West London. A number of years ago, working as an estate agent of all things, another industry.
I actually didn't know that.
Yeah, good trust. And we used to deal with tenants come in, and every month they would come and pay their rent. And I was dealing with a guy who was a bouncer in the pub over the road, and he'd come in and pay his rent every month. And one day he came in a suit. I said, "What are you doing wearing a suit?" He says, "Oh, I've got a new job." I said, "Well, you got a new job. How did you get a job?" He said, "Well, I met a recruitment consultant." I said, "Recruitment consultant? What's that?" I had no idea what a recruitment consultant was. And so I looked in the Yellow Pages, looked that up, if people don't know what a Yellow Pages is. And because it was in the summer, so in the winter, I used to play rugby on a Saturday, and the deal was I didn't ever have to work a weekend in the winter, but in the summer I would work the weekends and have Wednesdays off. And one Wednesday I got the Yellow Pages, I phoned up three recruitment consultants, because it was a Wednesday, two of them were closed. One of them was open, he was in Richmond Green, and I went to go and see him, and I had a chat with him. He said, I think you'd be perfect as a financial advisor. And I had no idea at the time that that was all he recruited for. It was just pure luck.
Typical.
And another industry known for its values. And I went for an interview. I went for a series of interviews with the company Friends Provident back in the time, and they gave me a job. And that was that. That was back in the UK in the late 90s.
What was it that made you want to leave real estate and go to, except the bouncer in the suit?
So I was pretty good at my job. The real job at the time in real estate back then, I'm sure it's the same now, was actually getting the instructions, getting the houses on the market. So anyone can sell a house. Mm. You've got to sell your business to get the house on the market. And I was quite good at that. And we were a small independent, and we worked in an area where there were big multinationals, and we would clean up. And I remember one day knocking on the door of a house to go and look at it, measure it up and take it on the market, and thinking to myself, gosh, I hope the owner's not in, because I really can't face doing another one of these calls. And after the meeting, I sat down in the car and said to myself, there's something seriously wrong here, because this should be what I'm getting the buzz from, and I should be really excited about it, and I wasn't enjoying it at all. I actually would rather them not be there. So I thought, this is time for a change.
Mm.
And that's as simple as that.
It's almost like hoping that clients don't turn up to class.
Yeah, exactly that.
It would be a little bit dysfunctional, wouldn't it?
I imagine you've got one or two clients, you probably hope they don't turn up, but... But you'd be worried if nobody turned it up.
Do a list of that in show 1000. You asked me before we started
who's recording coming to 1000.
What we'll do for show 1000. Tell us a little bit, because I think it's, I was quite rude 10 minutes ago about financial services, introducing it. Tell us what you actually do. We know why you're different, because honesty is at the forefront. But like we do have this thing, and it's the same. What do? You're a personal trainer. I'm a personal trainer, whatever. Just label me. I'm a financial advisor. Label me done. I'm a real estate agent. Label me done. What do you do?
Oh, okay. Good question. So I'm a chartered financial advisor in the UK. We've got a practice in the UK that's regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority there. I'm also an investment advisor representative in the US, regulated by the SEC. I'm a wealth manager in Australia, regulated by ASICS. I'm a financial advisor in Europe, regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland, and also the Cyprus Securities and Exchange Commission. And we've obviously got an office here. So we're helping predominantly expats or internationally mobile people, although we've got a lot of clients in the UK that have never really left the country other than for holidays, with their life planning, their wealth, and looking after their savings, investments, insurance, anything from, you know, husband and wife with 2.4 children to multi-million pound portfolios, looking at the asset management, looking at the risk profiles, looking at their cash flow modeling to make sure they've got enough money when they need it, and protecting that.
What are some of the biggest mistakes people are making when it comes to their money?
Sometimes they don't take advice. Sometimes they take the wrong advice. But the most thing that we see is not really having any concept of risk. People have bias towards certain things, and they don't consider them to be risky. We see it. Crypto is a fantastic example. All my money is in Bitcoin. It'll never go down. That's not risky. All my money's in real estate. That'll never go down. All my money's in, you look at people that used to work for Lloyds Bank in the UK, they would have a pension with Lloyds Bank, they would have all their share scheme with Lloyds Bank and everything. Bank shares never go down, I'll be all right. They don't consider it risky, even if it was any other company. Having all your money in one company would be bonkers. They lost money. So it's that concept of risk. People spend way, way too much. a lot of people do. That's a simple problem to solve. A lot of that comes down, ties in nicely what we were saying earlier about the FOMO and the social media and trying to keep up with the Joneses. But I think as much as anything, it's not having a proper plan, not taking advice or taking the wrong advice and getting the risk profile wrong.
What should people be aware of from, we'll move off from this in a second, mate, because I know you like to talk about other things, but what should people be aware of when, unfortunately, or hopefully more people can meet you through the show, but what should they be aware of when they're actually having a conversation with someone who's going to advise them financially?
Be aware of their motives.
Yeah.
Try and understand, firstly, and ask them, how do you make your money? Because, look, I'm not going to lie to you, we're not a charity. We do make money. I'm going to make money from your money. But it's how we make the money which is important. And if somebody is what I would call in the smash and grab, you know, take all the money and run, you're not going to see them again after they've done the placement. If they're getting big upfront commissions, the chances are your ongoing service is probably not going to be up to you. Ask what experience they've got, ask what qualifications they've got, and ask them how they're getting paid and what they're getting paid. Those are all good, reasonable questions. If people can't answer that without bluster, then walk away. It's as simple as that. In an ideal world, get a recommendation from somebody that you trust. I'm really lucky, like majority of my personal business comes from existing clients and recommendations from your existing clients. I wasn't joking earlier about doing the webinars and the Facebook videos and the Instagram things. That's great on the business side of things for Hoxton. It brings a lot of leads for them, but the majority of my business is recommendations and referrals. So ask for those.
Obviously, I don't want to compromise any confidentiality, and I know you won't allow me to, but you're privy to seeing what people make.
Yeah, of course.
You understand from pretty much, they don't even have to be a client. I guess it could be an early stage. You understand what people are making. You've already told us that people spend too much. So my question here is, what's enough?
Yeah. So you'll know yourself, one of the things I spend a lot of time working through with my clients is trying to answer exactly that. When is enough enough? What do you want to achieve? And when do you want to achieve it? And you're right, I know a lot of things about a lot of people, all of which I'll take to my grave with me. Mm. I can have a dinner party here or in Dubai. Sorry, we are in Dubai, here or in the UK. 6 or 7 different people there, all of them being clients of mine, none of them knowing that I know everything about everybody else. Same in the gym. I can have a class here in the gym and be working with 3 or 4 different people in the class and not know. That's the only downside to our business. If I was building houses or even if I was selling cars, I could say, yeah, look, I built that house or I sold that car. Isn't that good? But if I'm dealing with someone's personal finances, I can't turn around to his mate and say, yeah, I did that. You know, I helped him do that. I'm relying on them to tell other people, and I'm fortunate most of my clients will do that. I'm very lucky, you know, I've been in Dubai for nearly best part of 20 years now, 19 years, and I can go anywhere without having to worry about bumping into somebody that, you know,
you've sold them some dodgy plan.
We've some dodgy plan too.
That's funny because they're bankrupt and already
they're already gone. So I'm lucky from that point of view. But yeah, so I do know a lot of things about a lot of people. That goes back to what we're saying, you know, people not only trust us to do the right thing by them, but they trust us with their personal and private information, same as they will do for you. They'll trust us with their goals, they'll trust us with their money. And culturally, you know, I'm from the UK, you're from the UK. Predominantly, we don't talk about that sort of stuff openly. Mm. A lot of cultures are very different. You know, Americans are very brash about what they earn. They like the whole world to know. Certain countries in Northern Europe, they publish their income and publish their tax so everybody gets to see what everyone else is paying, and nobody cares. But we have to be sensitive to the fact that it is private and personal. And what is a lot to somebody might not be a lot to somebody else. Everything is important though.
So I'm going to ask my question again. How do we know what's enough?
It'd be different for every individual. Yeah. It'll be different for every individual. So for some people, it's never enough. And I once saw here we go. There's the irony for you on Instagram, a post saying, you know, if you count money, if money is your only aspiration, and money's numbers are infinite, you'll never be happy. You'll never be happy because you'll never get enough. You'll never get enough. So if you start to look for things, you know, if you have a family, what do you want for that family? You know, are you looking to put them through school, through university? Do you not care? If you don't have a family, what are you looking for yourself? Are you looking to make sure, you know, you're comfortable? What is comfortable is, you know, Henry Cooper said he can only drive one car at a time and only wear one suit at a time. Do you want one house, two houses, three houses? You've got to work through, and it'll be different for every individual.
So that must come to a side of the job which is very different to what people think it is. Because now what we're going back to where we started, if what makes you... Yeah, who are you?
Exactly right.
How do you've told us that you're qualified on all of these different continents, which is a whole podcast and an inspiring podcast on its own, to be honest, mate, how you did that. And it's, I should let everyone know, it's not normal. you're a victim of your own success because you've got clients in America and Australia and you're in the middle and everyone's you've got clients awake the whole time.
The whole time. But
it's absolutely phenomenal.
That's why I turn my notifications off.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why you don't like your phone and keep dropping it. But how much of your study, education, learning is actually about that kind of conversation of how much is
unfortunately
enough?
In the exams you don't learn enough of that comes from doing what I'm doing and working with people. Wow. For a long period of time. So I've got clients that I've worked with in 10-15 years leading up to their retirement, into their retirement and beyond, and some of those that have gone back to work because they didn't like the retirement. I've got some families where I'm working with three generations of the same family. So you get to learn that. So the asset, I've got to tell you, you know, there's no secret. The asset allocation part is easy. Mm. The investment part is easy. Getting those bits right is easy once you know what you're doing. The biggest part of my job really is a life coach to try and help people understand what they want, what they need, and how they're going to get there.
How do you navigate that?
Through conversation. In the first instance, through conversation, through listening. We were talking, weren't we, just before we hit the record button. Mm. But I firmly believe you've got two ears and one mouth. You really should be listening twice as much as you're talking and asking questions.
And that's one thing that's, we know that because we're friends, but we talk on WhatsApp. We used to talk on text.
Yeah.
And we went to BBM.
BBM.
But the best,
love BBM.
Always the best interactions. And I love it when we're talking about more serious issues, because you always turn up with a big folder, loads of paper, this big left hand, and there's drawings and there's, but that's who you are. But that's why you are who you are, mate. Yeah.
Correct. And that's been the hardest challenge for me to adapt to the more modern world, because it's harder for me to be who I am on Teams or Zoom, to bring the book out and to do the diagrams and the drawing and just that listening. So it might take more interaction online than it would do in person. I often say we you know, half an hour over a cup of tea is worth 7 or 8 Zoom meetings. But yeah, And we've had plenty of those in Ravi's and eat and drink over the years. And
spent a disproportionate amount of time drawing on paper tablecloths and all sorts. And
eating chicken.
Eating chicken. So with that, there must be a huge amount of what I would call almost emotional stress and emotional baggage that people, not on purpose, give to you, but you, by default, inherit.
Yeah.
How do you, what's your coping mechanism for that?
It's tough, mate. Yeah. Because one of my sort of taglines that I will often use to my clients is, hey, don't worry about that. You're paying us to worry about that for you. So all through the various different financial crises we've had, and recently, you know, the recent volatility in markets, none of my clients will have been panicking because we're in regular contact with them and they know that we're worrying about it on their behalf, so they don't have to. But to decompress then can be a challenge. It really can be, because we care. I care. I do actually care. And then you've just got to realize that you're doing the best that you can. Simple measure for me is somebody better off having spoken to you than they were if they hadn't spoken to you, right? That's number one. Mm. Then you get good, better, and best. So you've got to allow yourself that decompression on a regular basis. Coming here to the gym is a massive part of that for me. If I look through periods of my life where I'm perhaps not sleeping well or a little bit carrying a little bit of stress or anything, they usually coincide with times when I'm not training so well, and it's always hard to know which came first. Sometimes the medicine you need the most is the one you least want. But and all those usual things, I think you helped me learn a long time ago, funny enough, to do with rugby rather than anything else, is, look, emails don't always need an instant response. Take your time, think about it. And one of the things I say to my team is, look, is anything going to change between tonight and tomorrow? Because if it's not, we don't worry about it tonight, it'll look different in the morning. Some things do need a more urgent response, obviously, but usually we're okay.
We've linked our businesses on a few different levels, both from a bad reputation to a good reputation. There's another link that you drew before in the confidentiality of the client. When we're dealing with someone, we have a lot of confidential information. And like you said, mate, traditionally, because we're British, we don't talk about money, and you have that and you can't leak that out. So how do you process something if you can't talk to anyone about it?
How do I process my clients' information?
How do you personally, mate, if you've, you know, and maybe it's a bullshit example, but if someone's having a lot of stress and they've offloaded that onto you and it's related to their financial issues, and, you know, maybe they've lost a million here or gained a million there, or there's a dispute in the family, which are all very normal things, and people go through it, but you can't go home and talk about that.
No, obviously I can't talk about that
down at dinner with Linda and say, oh, geez, my client lost $1 million today. You've talking about integrity and honesty. That's not what you do.
That's right.
So how do you process these heavy burdens?
It's a really good question. And, you know, in the same way that doctors do, and I'm sure you do as well, you'll have the opportunity to discuss subject matters and topic matters with other professionals. You might have an issue with a client who's not moving particularly well and or has some particular motivation that you need help with. Or your team might speak to you more likely about that. So, you know, we do have that shared thing with other professionals that we can talk about in the team. But generally, it's just a case I'll write things down. Obviously, each client will have their own secure folder that we're writing notes on, and that'll do. But it is a challenge. That decompression is a challenge.
It's interesting. I encourage our coaches to remove the person and bring it back to a concept.
Yeah.
Because, and not only the coach that's bringing it, but the coaches that are around the table as well. So we learn about the concepts through books, through all sorts of different teaching. Just bring a concept to the table? What if I had a client? And we should all just be comfortable with, oh, who's that client? That's not an interesting question. Mm-hmm. The interesting part of it is, okay, what did you do? What have you spoken about? So they're almost like case studies that, but it is, and I think it's, well, I know it's definitely a really personal, like a question for my own benefit, that, because I'm also privy to some incredible information that I know, and it could be as simple. I know that if I was to speak to you about it, you'd probably have an answer, but I can't. And sometimes if it's conceptual, it doesn't really come across. Whereas if I said to you, mate, I've got this bloke, he's 35 and this is happening, blah, 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 and when we went through it, there's a lot more context. But then by the time I finish going through it, you know exactly who the guy is. Yeah. So it's challenging though, huh?
It is a challenge.
Talking about other challenges, mate, and you mentioned it earlier, and I know you shared it with a lot of people. In 2000, and I think it was about 2014, 2015, one of the very first Inner Talks that we had, you spoke to us about a phase of your life that was insanely challenging. Do you want to share a little bit? You don't have to, but if you'd like to share a little bit about that, because there's some great learnings there as well.
Yeah, I don't think there's any secret around the fact that I had best part of three years where I was incapacitated through, wasn't able to work with depression, anxiety and depression. Depression mainly was the issue. That was in the late 1990s, early 2000.
How did you get into that?
How do I get into depression? I wouldn't recommend it if you've got.
Well, that's the thing.
If you've got a choice,
folks that are listening, go the opposite.
Yeah,
way.
Go the opposite way. I think mine started when I was 17. My elder brother died unexpectedly. He was probably at the time my biggest role model, friend, and all the things you would expect a big brother to be. That was quite tough for me at the time. I never really dealt with that at the time, so I didn't go through a proper grieving process. I internalized all of that, and I put that down to the start of the issues for me, which then came out and bit me on the ass some years later, at a time where things were very difficult for me in my personal life outside of that. And I guess I spiraled downwards.
It's interesting, isn't it? The thing that we hear most about hardships and tragedy, which that what you've just described is both of those and more, mate, is we need to move on. But actually, we need to deal with stuff before we move on. But it's almost, you went the route of normality, didn't
right.
you? You're like, right, yeah, it's happened.
That's it. Next day.
Crack on.
Yeah.
And then it's, do you think that's the absolute root of it, you said?
I think it's a major contributing factor. Yeah. I think there's probably, you know, some people are more susceptible to others, to that sort of issues with anxiety, mental health issues, probably a little history of that in the family to lesser degrees as well, I think. But I think that and the internal was a combination.
Two and a half years of the word you used, incapacitated, unable to work, unable to leave the house, unable to leave your bedroom for long stretches. That's tough, mate.
Yeah, it was tough.
How did you get out of it?
I think I started, with, if you go back to the Inner Talks, just setting goals, non-negotiables. And for me, the thing that really first started, helped me get through it all was, I'm going to brush and floss my teeth twice a day. That's it. I'm going to brush and floss my teeth twice a day. If I can go through a week of that, I'm all right. And then a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks of doing that, hey, I'm okay. And you build on that. So next thing you do, well, I'm going to eat three meals a day. And then you really need to brush and floss your teeth, right? And you do that, and you start building those goals upon goals. And then eventually you've just got to get a little bit of fire in your belly, which I was able to find, fortunately, to drive me forward to get better. And as I started doing that and getting better, you find good people around you. Had some good, very good friends, which I've still got now. And as I came through it, strong relationships as well. But if you ask my family now, there's still ups and downs, even now, that people are very kind to put up with. But that was my way out. So start with a little goal. Mm. That's now non-negotiable. It's a really good litmus test for me. Sometimes, you know, you might just feel a little bit tired, maybe falling asleep on the sofa, and I want to just crawl into bed. I can't go to bed now without brushing and flossing my teeth, because that's like, oh, hang on a minute, is that the first sign that I'm on the, I'm slipping back into some sort of inactivity?
How hard was it to floss and brush your teeth?
It's tough, eh? It was tough. It was really tough, because it felt like a chore. It felt like a chore, but that chore soon becomes non-negotiable. It soon becomes something you don't even think about. It's like breathing now. It's easy. I don't have to
think
about breathing. Is that
because there was no light? Because you couldn't see a benefit. Okay, you convince yourself that if I set this small goal, I will start to get better. But you stop doing those things because you can't see past. There's no even short, mid, never mind long-term vision of life.
There's nothing, no. There's nothing. At that point, it depends, you know, how deep and dark you want to get. But when you wake up in the morning and, you're gutted that you've woken up, then you've got a tough day ahead of you. And if you can't sleep and you eventually fall asleep and wake up and that's your cycle, then it's pretty tough.
How's that set you up for the person you are now, mate?
Look, as I said earlier, I wouldn't recommend it to anyone, but I feel really privileged to have gone through that. And I think I'm much more aware of myself, perhaps of other people as well. And having gone through that period once, I'm much more aware of my own feelings now. My mood. I'm much more aware of my mood, if I'm getting a bit down, and I know things get better, you know? So things just get better. That's it.
That's
having
a beautiful,
that faith and that belief.
Yeah. But that's a beautiful thing to keep in your pocket. Things will get better.
Yeah, that's it. So it's all right. I've done this. I've been there. It's okay. And it'll wash over and it's going to get better. It's okay.
You used flossing and brushing your teeth as a big tool to get you out. For that week, it was literally just that. What's the mind saying 30 years on, 25 years on, when you go to floss and brush your teeth? Do you remember it?
Occasionally, I will. Yeah, not every single time, but I will do. I will do. As I said, don't judge me, but you know, there might be the odd night where if you're tired or whatever, I really can't be bothered to brush my teeth. And no, come on. You've got to get in and do this. And you just remember, no, I remember doing this. It's okay. And I love the feeling. I love the feeling.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of people hate the dentist, right? But yeah, it's a pretty awesome and unique feeling leaving the dentist after a scale and clean.
Oh, I love it. I love to be able to breathe through my teeth. You know, that whistling sound, it's okay. Find a good dentist that's going to be gentle. That's yeah, what I would say, and see them often.
But when you're in that moment going to, and it's there's so many, I mean, everything in life, there's, if you think about stuff hard enough, is all very similar. Everything sits within similar silos, doesn't it? The actual effort to, I mean, I'm trying to make an appointment with my dentist at the moment, and it's a nightmare.
That's a challenge. If they're any good, they're busy, right?
Yeah, you know, that as well.
The dentist is available tomorrow, watch out.
that too. But the hard work to get to it, if we can't see what's on the other side, the vision of where we're headed is tough, isn't it?
Yeah.
Talking about that then, mate, and I won't take too much more of your time. you spend a lot of time planning for people's, helping people to plan for their future and making sure they're financially stable in their future, or they have enough. Where are you going?
Yeah, it's a good question, one that we often talk about at home and in the office as well. And there's a real challenge there, which I've yet to reconcile, in that every time I take on a new client, it's a commitment to them and their journey. So I can think about my own journey, what I want to do and how I want to do it and where I want to be and so on and so forth. But if I'm thinking, well, hang on a minute, if I stop work now, which I could do, what happens to all those people that I took on last year that I promised I was going to help them for the next however many years? Mm. And I understand and know that, and I know their plans and I know what they want to do and how it's going to work. And that might sound a little bit conceited because I understand I'm not the only advisor in the world, but it is a personal responsibility of mine. So I think for me, the most important thing that I've been trying to work on is balance. And you'll know I'm very good at all and I'm very good at nothing. It's now trying to get that in between. So a couple of years ago, I was working super hard, super long. Did very well out of it, thank you very much, but wasn't sleeping, couldn't do anything, barely saw the family. Last year, I traveled super hard and super long and had a great time, but now I'm trying to get somewhere in between that allows a sustainable business so I can maintain my commitment to my client, but also that commitment to myself and our family and what we're doing, because there's no reason then, if we get that balance right, that I couldn't be doing this for a long time.
Can you see yourself doing it for a long time?
I can see myself doing what I'm doing. I'm lucky enough, like you, I guess, to be able to pick and choose which clients I want to work with. And I can see myself having now, and more so, despite what I said earlier about Teams and Zoom and phone call, if you've got a good relationship with the client and perhaps you've seen them and you've done the sketch pad in the meeting and they know who you are, you know, a half hour Teams or a half hour Zoom is enough every couple of months for most people, sometimes not even that. So, and I can do that. Most of my clients are kind enough, good enough people to not really care where I am.
Yeah, right.
They really don't, you know, and those that are, most of them actually care that I'm happy and where I am, that I'm happy where I am more than anything. So yeah, I can see that going on. I travel less now, which is good. You'll know that through various stages of my life, my travel's been very hectic, whether that's been back and forth to see James, back and forth to see clients, or a combination of the both. And Linda, obviously, Lynn's traveling a lot more now to come out to Dubai, which is great. James is can travel independently, which he does do, and we tend to do it in blocks rather than short weekends. So that's more sustainable from my well-being point of view, tiredness and health, which is good. Love Dubai, been here nearly 20 years. Mm. We're fortunate enough to have a nice home in the UK as well. So we can pick and choose the best of both worlds.
I'm struggling to visualize a near or mid future where you don't come in a suit.
No, I don't think so. I tried it. I did try wearing polo shirts.
No,
I tried it for a bit. You know, when I left my previous company a number of years ago, I've lost the tie, right? So you've got to give me some credit. I've lost the tie.
It's so hot, mate.
But it's good. But you'll know when I'm in my gym, I come wearing my gym gear. When I'm in my work, I wear my work gear, and I've got three suits and I rotate them. Each suit's got two pairs of, that's not true. I've got three suits in the UK, three suits in Dubai. Each suit's got two pairs of trousers and I go through them, you know, blue, blue, grey, grey, black, black, blue, blue, grey, grey, black, black, all in order. All my shirts are in order, so I wear them all evenly. It's the same with my gym shorts, the same, which, you know, I managed to get many, many years of use out of my t-shirts.
14 in counting.
So, you know, all my socks are black, all my underpants are black. They're all very kindly folded and put in order, so I use them all. So my life has certain orders and
I can't actually believe we haven't gone into that. That's a whole other show as well, isn't it?
But yeah, we laugh about that. But yeah, so I did a Zoom call with a client yesterday, and I said, "Hey, mate, I can't see your camera's not working." "Oh yeah, sorry, put the camera on." He didn't even have a shirt on.
Okay.
So, and there's me in my shirt. I've done a lot of work in mines, gold mines, coal mines around the world, and there you don't turn up wearing a suit and a shirt because those miners would chew you.
Yeah.
Chew you bad. But yeah, but no, I'll still bring a suit to the office.
I think it's what you said, mate. I think it's non-negotiables. It's the sense of normality, and you know, we've spoken a little bit and we've touched on purpose, but it's a purpose, and one thing that, whether you love wearing a suit in 45 degrees, one thing that's very clear from what you've just said and from a lot of what we've spoken about in the last hour, your life works and is successful because you have non-negotiables. Yeah. You have places to be, you have times to be there, and you've programmed your brain that this is what I am.
That's right.
You know, and it's actually incredible. We've often spoken about in depth about your work, about financial services, and every time we've done it, as I said, you've turned up with all the paper, the big left hand, the pen in hand, and normally in a suit.
Yeah.
You'd never sit and talk about that in your gym kit, even if we're at the gym, and I've seen you have meetings with people, and you're always and I think that's your non-negotiables, and that's your standard that you set yourself.
I think for me, and I know it's not even expected, I think majority of people, but it's an expectation I put on myself. And even on a Friday in the office that I sit in, they have dress down Friday, and it's like
you wear a tie.
I still wear my suit and my shirt and trousers, amazing. Because why do you want to be wasting time trying to choose what you're wearing?
Show number 900. I appreciate that you're the 900th person that I've had the opportunity to ask annoying questions to for an hour, mate. It's excuse me. Is absolute privilege. I appreciate that you also took the time. Whether the mini documentary that we've made on you for being member number one is out by the time this show's out, or it's still in final stages because Daffy wants another picture of you and I having coffee. Yep. We're not sure, but I appreciate that, mate. I know so many people in the community also appreciate you. I know you like to stay low until people know, and then you bring them in with arms wide open, and a lot of people, you bring everyone in with arms wide open, but a lot of people's lives have actually been impacted because yours was impacted first, and you were open to me running to your house at 6 a.m. on Sunday night. Was training, it was a Monday morning, and for that I'm always grateful. Yeah, mate.
So am I. Every day for 3 weeks you turned up. By the third week I was worried, oh my God, what do I owe this guy, you know?
You're paying me now, mate.
I do feel a lifetime's worth of debt and gratitude.
It's no debt.
And I'm very pleased to be part of it. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for listening, folks. Captain Brooks, I appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Cheers.